pleasure for the invitation. It's my great pleasure to be here. Today I will take you a journey between the geometry degree of freedom inside the topological phase of matter, and my title is Spatial Symmetry Breaking in Fractional Quantum Hall States and Beyond. And actually this beyond is the second part of my talk. Okay, so actually for a long time it is believed that the Ginzburg-Landau theory is already enough to classify different phases of matter by symmetry groups. So like those kind of crystal materials breaks the translational rotation symmetries, and the ferromagnetic phase of matter breaks the spin rotation symmetries. However, upon the 1980s, because of the discovery of fractional quantum Hall states, people now realize there are lots of exotic phases of matter which cannot be classified by symmetry groups. They might be some disorder phase, but such kind of disorder phase of matter are still distinguished from a trivial phase of matter. And such kind of exotic phases includes the topological order phase, like the fractional quantum Hall states or the Z2 quantum spin liquids, which is a gap phase whose ground state wave function involved with some Lorentz entanglement structure. And this also includes some symmetry protected topological phase, whose ground state wave function only have some kind of short-range entanglement. But as long as we have some kind of symmetry constraint, there's no way for us to adiabatically connect your wave functions toward a Dirac product state. So this is some local entanglement structure which is protected by symmetries. And there are also some exotic gapless phases like the quantum U1 spin liquids and some topological semi-matters. And for a long time, it is believed that a symmetry breaking phase of matter and a topological phase of matter would repel each other. And today, what I want to see is whether it is possible to intertwine your symmetry breaking phase of matter with a topological phase of matter. Or equivalently, can I drive a spontaneously symmetry breaking in the background of a topological phases? If this is possible, then there are some key questions involved with such kind of exotic intertwined phase. First, how does your topological degree of freedom intertwine with your broken symmetry order parameter, and how does your spontaneously symmetry breaking affected by the topological nature of your background? And also, if we have a symmetry breaking inside a deep topological phase, is there any interesting interplay between your symmetry defect and your topological quasi-particles? For example, do we expect there can be some non-trivial braiding statistics between your symmetry defect and your topological quasi-particles? And in order to answer all these questions, so we will first study into the spontaneously pneumatic phase in the fractional quantum Hall region, where your rotation symmetry is broken spontaneously in the fractional quantum Hall states. So actually, for fractional quantum Hall state, we know there are interacting 2D electrons confined in a 2D quantum well and in the presence of a strong magnetic field. And as certain fillings, we'll find the fermions actually form some incompressible quantum Hall liquid, which is a topological order state with some anionic excitations. However, for such kind of strongly interacting fermion system, we also expect, apart from the topological quantum Hall liquid, there can have some tendency to form a spontaneously broken symmetry electronic states. And actually, there are some recent experimental data which shows there is actually some competing order between a symmetry breaking phase of matter and a fractional quantum Hall phase of matter. So this experimental data is done for the nuclear 5-half fractional quantum Hall states. And actually, they tune the pressure here. And by tuning the external pressure, they found there is a quantum phase transition between a pneumatic state, which is a trivial electronic state, which breaks your rotation symmetry, and a Fermion state, which is the non-abelian fractional quantum Hall state. So this is an example between the competing order of topological phase of matter and symmetry breaking phase of matter. But beyond this, one also finds there are some possibilities where a topological phase of matter for fractional quantum Hall states can coexist with a spatial symmetry breaking phase of matter. So this is an example which measures the nuclear 7/3 fractional quantum Hall states, which is the abelian fractional quantum Hall states, and they apply a tilde magnetic field. So the in-plane magnetic field actually breaks your rotation symmetry by hand. And by measuring this resistance versus the temperature dependence, we find there is some anisotropy transport there, and at approximately 50 millikelvin, there is a sharp peak of your resistivity, which indicates there might be a large pneumatic susceptibility here. And such kind of large pneumatic susceptibility actually give rise to a possibility of a pneumatic phase transition inside your fractional quantum hole region. However, in this experiment, they apply a tilde magnetic field, so your in-plane magnetic field breaks your rotation symmetry by hand, but what we want to figure out is whether there can be some spontaneously symmetry breaking and such kind of exotic phase transition inside your fractional quantum hole phase.
So if I take a glass of water and put some ice in it, mm-hmm. ice and water, we mm-hmm. can have those two coexisting at least for a while. Is that what we're talking about here?
So we can always take a slice of topological phase and a slice of symmetry breaking phase and stick them, but that's just a trivial coexistence. There's no interesting interwine between your topological degree of freedom and your symmetry breaking degree of freedom. And what I expect is there should be some non-trivial interplay, so your symmetry breaking phase of matter and even the phase transition should be affected by the topological nature. That's what I'm looking for.
Very good. But if I make an experiment and I get something like that, mm-hmm. will I be able to say, oh, this is, you know, trivially coexistent? Is that trivial coexistence, or can I say more than that?
For me, whether it is trivial is we compare it to the conventional pneumatic phase in the electronic crystals and find whether we have some exotic behavior which is not expected in the ordinary pneumatic phase for the electronic crystals. And in their phase, actually, their pneumatic phase could be very exotic because the pneumatic defect can carry some fractional charges statistics.
But this experiment is not indicative of that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, this one doesn't have the pneumaticity. There's no pneumatic susceptibility measured here, right?
No.
Because it has a symmetry breaking field, that's
sure.
what you're saying? Right. But so how do you know that dip in RxX is associated with a pneumatic?
Because pneumatic simply means you break your spatial symmetry, so your transport, here it's a fractional quantum hole state, which is a gap state, but you can still measure the transport at finite temperature or finite momentum, and you expect there is some anisotropy between the transport in the x direction and y direction. That's exactly what they measure here. So this happens in the finite temperature. In zero temperature, I don't know what happened, and we must look into the finite temperature or the finite momentum responses.
But here, the low temperature limit, RxX.
Yeah, it diverged. Actually, they only measure toward here, and we don't know what happened at extremely low temperature. But one way, I guess, why our RxX would goes to finite here is if you're at low temperature and their in-plane magnetic field is pretty large. And imagine for electron system with an in-plane magnetic field, the electrons has a tendency to go in the perpendicular direction as your magnetic field. And that's why actually at low temperature, we expect such kind of fractional quantum hole nature should be damaged because of your large in-plane magnetic field.
Is this RxY measured? Is it still on the plateau or?
It's RxX and RyY,
yeah, yeah.
So that's
I'm asking like if it's RxY is measured, because you are asking the question about interplay between topological order, so I'm wondering if the plateau is still there.
Yes.
Still there.
They have a finite conductivity of your whole conductivity. So actually, there are lots of instabilities and symmetry breaking possibilities for fractional quantum hole state. Like in some higher lambda level, we do observe some stripe state or the bubble state. But the reason why we first look into the pneumatic fractional quantum hole state is we want to see some interesting interplay between your symmetry breaking order parameter and your topological phase of matter. And for a pneumatic state, the pneumatic order parameter coupled with the electrons in terms of the stress tensor. So one can regard such kind of pneumatic order as a dynamical frame which modifies the local spatial geometries. So, and we know that for fractional quantum hole state, there are lots of interesting interplay between geometry responses and the topological degree of freedom. For example, one of the geometry responses is known as the Wannsee shift. If I put your fractional quantum hole on a non-flat geometry, we'll see there is some charge redistribution and your electromagnetic responses would be modified because your geometry curvature also serves as a source of your particle density. And there are some gravitational anomalies, which is associated with the chiral edge state. And in terms of geometry, such kind of gravitational anomaly can be interpreted as the braiding statistics of two declinations. And this is exactly the defect of your pneumatic order parameter. So if we can realize a pneumatic phase in the fractional quantum hole region, we expect there are lots of interesting interplay between your symmetry order parameter and the topological degree of freedom. So now we want to drive some spontaneously pneumaticity in a strongly interacting electron system. And what is the right interaction to drive such kind of spontaneously pneumaticities? So for any kind of fermion interaction, we can expand them in terms of the lambda parameters. And for the L equal 2 channel of the lambda parameter, this is associated with the quadrupolar interaction, which is the interacting between two electron quadrupole moment. And the electron quadrupole moment, in terms of fermion theory, is something like a stress tensor where you can drive some anisotropy in your effective mass. And this do breaks your rotation symmetry because your electron dispersion becomes anisotropic. So this is one of the mechanisms to break your rotation symmetry by driving a fluctuating electron quadrupole moment, which give you a fluctuating anisotropic effective mass. So first we know that we need some attractive interactions between the quadrupolar interactions. Okay, so.
Sorry, I lost the intuition there. Can you repeat that? So you have the electrons there, and you're gonna induce.
We are going to.
How are you gonna make them interact in a different way? Well, I do not understand how you're gonna make this happen.
So this means if the fractional quantum hole state has some attractive interactions in your quadrupolar interaction channel, then they can have a tendency to get a pneumatic instability because this will induce a high fluctuation of your electron quadrupole moment. And for this electron quadrupole moment, this is exactly some generation of the anisotropic mass of your fermions, which breaks your rotation symmetry.
But you don't have any microscopic motivation for that Pomerantchuk type term, do you?
We do have. So the only problem is we hope this is an attractive interaction, and this should be strong enough. And this is actually seen in some kind of higher lambda levels, but we don't have a microscopic way to say how can we tune the interaction strength to make it large enough. And for the fractional quantum hole states, that's a strongly interacting fermion theory. So in order to deal with this theory, we have to simplify our problem. So the way we simplified our problem is we used the Chern-Simons gauge theory. So for each electron, we are going to attach two flux for the numerical one-third filling Laughlin fractional quantum hole states. And such kind of flux attachment will cancel part of the electromagnetic gauge flux. And a composite fermion composed of your flux and your original fermion is in the integer quantum hole level. So your effective theory becomes an integer quantum hole of your composite fermion plus a Chern-Simons gauge theory, which means there's some binding between your Chern-Simons gauge flux and your fermion density. And for fermions, we always have a repulsive interaction between the density-density channel. And remember that now the fermion density can be interpreted in terms of the gauge flux of your Chern-Simons gauge theory. Then the density-density interaction finally becomes the Maxwell term of your Chern-Simons gauge flux. And this term now becomes very irrelevant because as long as we have a Chern-Simons term, we generate a gap where gauge flux and Maxwell term is irrelevant at low energy. So now we have got rid of the strongly interacting fermion problems and simplified to the composite fermion coupled to a U1 gauge field. So our full theory is composed of such kind of Chern-Simons gauge theory plus some attractive quadrupolar interaction to induce your pneumatic instabilities. And now what I do is first we do some Hubbard-Stronovich transformation for your four fermion quadrupolar interactions to eliminate the four fermion interactions. And finally, what we obtain is we are actually introduced the two pneumatic field coming from your Hubbard-Stronovich transformation, and they do couple to different electron quadrupole moments. And from this coupling type, we will see that your two pneumatic field actually couple with the stress tensor of your fermion. So they somehow serve as a geometry degree of freedom as a dynamical metric, which modifies your local geometry in the spatial part. So now we have a fluctuating electron quadrupole as a dynamical metric, and we also assume we have some at least weak Galilean invariant symmetry breaking, so we have some higher order Laplacian theory for your non-interacting fermions, and we add on this theory because this is pretty essential for us to get a continuous phase transition. Otherwise, we will get a first order phase transition.
So again, I need some reassurance here. So you use flagged attachment as a means to simplify a problem that otherwise we don't know how to address. But interestingly, the simplified problem still had the quadrupole moments that you wanted.
Yes, the quadrupole.
Are we cooking things too much? I mean, is that a derivation or? I don't know. I don't have a sense for how is it that you managed to simplify the problem and still get exactly the terms that you wanted.
So we have two type of interaction. First is density-density interaction. Second is quadrupolar interaction. Quadrupolar interaction is, we find that it is essential to get a strong enough quadrupolar interaction to get nematic instabilities.
So it's clear that you want to keep that term. I'm asking, are we just forcing that it will be kept under this? You know, just make a major simplification of the initial model with a flux attachment? So that
flux attachment only simplifies for your density-density interactions. Because for partial fuel along the level, you have lots of degeneracy and with strong interactions, you don't know how to deal with that. Once you do the flux attachment, and with the Chernsheim theory, you will find a density-density interaction in terms of the Maxwell term becomes irrelevant. So we are starting from a fixed point, which is a stable fixed point.
Okay. And then you add by hand the quadrupole.
Yes.
Again, you add it, you put it there.
Yes.
Okay.
So when you say the density-density, so are you assuming D is short-ranged?
Yes, it's always short-ranged.
So you imagine long interaction screened by some.
Actually, even for the long interaction, if it's cooler interaction, it's still stable.
If it is one over R, then it's not irrelevant.
True.
So but you want it to be irrelevant instead?
Yes, so it's short-range interaction.
So you assume these short-range interactions.
Yeah, but for some numerical data, actually, they start from some Coulomb type interaction to find it. You still get a stable fractional quantum Hall phase, although your GMP mode's structure factor would change.
In your theory, you regard these from short-range
interactions
screen Coulomb.
Yes. So first, what we want to do is we want to figure out the nematic phase transitions, and we want to compare it into the conventional nematic phase transition in those 2D liquid crystals or the electronic crystals to see whether they are different or same. And we want to make sure whether your topological nature, especially the chiral nature of your fractional quantum Hall state, can change your phase transition type. And what we do is first, because we are already starting from a stable fixed point, so we can first integrate out your gapped fermion and the electron Chernsheim's gauge theory to obtain the phase transition theory. So it looked like this. So first, let's ignore the first term. And this term is just a free energy part of your U1 nematic field. And when R becomes negative, we expect there should be some nematicity because your nematic field grows a non-zero expectation value. However, the non-trivial part appear here in the dynamical part, which is only first order in time derivative. Such kind of term is not expected in the nematic theory in those 2D liquid crystals or 2D electronic crystals. And this term breaks parity and time reversal symmetry, so we only expected such kind of term can appear in fractional quantum Hall states or other chiral spin liquid states. And because of this first, the physical interpretation of this term can be regarded as a Barry phase term, which actually shows the trajectory of the phase of your U1 nematic boson enclosed from the order parameters. And because of this term, which is first order in time derivative, when we are at a quantum criticality, where this term is zero, we'll find your dynamical exponent would be z equal two, because this one is only first order in time derivative. So this is a Lifshitz criticality for the nematic phase transition. And because you have z equal two dynamical exponent, then your nematic field scaling will change, and your five-fold term actually becomes marginal, and actually it's marginal irrelevant. So this is not expected in a pure 2D nematic phase transition in those liquid crystals and electronic crystal. And actually, the chiral nature of our fractional quantum Hall states give rise to such kind of Lifshitz criticality. And such kind of Lifshitz criticality for the nematic phase transition, we have a stronger statement that in any time reversal symmetry breaking state, such kind of Barry phase term is always expected there. So for any nematic phase happens inside a chiral nature, like the fractional quantum Hall states or the chiral spin liquid phase, their quantum criticality will always be a Lifshitz criticality. So
is this chirality enforces the dynamical exponent to be true or the time reversal symmetry breaking? Because time reversal symmetry breaking doesn't necessarily imply chirality.
Actually, it's chirality.
So is the dynamical critical exponent true at any energy scale, or is just the classical value that you start with?
Yes, the classical.
So will it change as you go to lower energies?
For fractional quantum Hall state or any incompressible state, it won't. But one problem is for the half-U lambda level, which is also a chiral phase, but it's gapless, then such kind of dynamical exponent is not z equal 2 because we have a lambda damping term, which usually give you a z equal 3 dynamical exponent. But this is always universal for gapped phase.
I guess here it's also important to have a U1 rotation, SO2 rotation.
True.
You feel also need four-fold rotation symmetry, then you wouldn't have that.
True. So this dynamical exponent is just a phase factor of your U1 boson. So now our question is, because you ask whether chirality is important or your time reversal or parity symmetry breaking is important, we want to see whether the coefficient of such kind of Barry phase term can be related with any kind of important quantities in your fractional quantum Hall state. And actually, such kind of Barry phase is related with quantity which is called Hall viscosities. So first, remember that your nematic field always coupled with your stress tensor of the electrons, which is the similar way as how the geometry degree of freedom coupled with your stress tensor, at least in a composite fermion level, then any nematic response could be keep track of as your metric response. And actually, such kind of Barry phase term is coming from the correlator of the stress tensor in terms of the parity odd part. And the coefficient in the front is what we call the Hall viscosity. So if we have a time-dependent background metric, we'll get a stress tensor responses. And such kind of response is actually a dissipationless response, which can be understood as the quantum version of the Coriolis force. So I guess probably Hall viscosity is not known to everyone, but one of the quantity we know is the Hall conductivity in fractional quantum Hall states. Where we apply electric field in x direction, we get a charge current in y direction as a perpendicular response. And in the classical or semi-classical level, the Hall conductivity could be understood in terms of the Coriolis force. So for a charge particle in the presence of a magnetic field, it will encounter with a force which is perpendicular to the direction it moves. And also, the Hall viscosity here in a semi-classical level can be regarded as the Coriolis force, because we know in fractional quantum Hall states, the electrons or your composite fermions forms the cyclotron motions, and they have some lambda orbits. So if we go into a rotating frame, if we have a velocity in one direction, then we will encounter with the Coriolis force, which is in the perpendicular of the direction u moves. And how is this Coriolis force related with our Hall viscosity responses? So imagine we have a fractional quantum Hall fluid and we shear it, so there's some displacement field. And we know for such kind of displacement field, the spatial dependence of the displacement give you the spatial metric tensor. The time dependence of your displacement field can be regarded as the velocity field of a hydron dynamical theories. And if we have a Coriolis force, then as long as I have a velocity in the y direction, I must have a force encountered in the x directions. And now let's do a partial derivative over x on both sides of the equation. then it becomes the stress tensor Txx, which is proportion to the time derivative of your metric tensor. And the coefficient here is known as the whole viscosity, which is exactly the result of your Coriolis force. So actually, because in fractional quantum Hall states, as long as it is you have a chiral nature, then your whole viscosity will be non-zero, at least in the composite fermion level, and this gives you a non-zero Barry phase term of your pneumatic theory. Such kind of Barry phase term is only first order in time derivative, so at a quantum critical region, this will generate a z equal to dynamical exponent. So that is why the chiral nature actually gives rise to this kind of non-trivial phase transitions. Okay, and so now we know the phase transition is actually highly affected because of the chiral nature. Because what we want is a coexistence between a symmetry breaking phase and a topological order phase. So first we have to make sure the pneumatic phase is still in the fractional quantum Hall region, or the phase transition shall never damage your fractional quantum Hall nature. So in order to verify this, we have to look into some quasi-particle excitations and the collective excitations. So during this phase transition procedure, what we found is first, the Laughlin quasi particles always remain gapped, so your topological nature is never changed, and also your cone mode always remain gapped. The only collective mode which is affected is the GMP mode at small wavelengths. And what we found is when we approach the quantum criticality, the GMP mode is highly mixed with your pneumatic fluctuations. And during the phase transition, such kind of GMP mode, a small wavelength has a tendency to drop down to zero. And also in the symmetry breaking phase, such kind of GMP mode is mixing with your pneumatic Goldstone bosons. The reason is pretty clear because the GMP mode somehow can be regarded as a fluctuating quadrupole moment. So as we are adding on some quadrupolar interaction to drive the pneumatic instability, the fluctuating quadrupole moment should be very soft during the phase transition. And because we know at GMP mode at small wavelengths is some Magnon photon mode, and they also have a minimum at a finite wavelength, which is the Magnon Rodon mode. There are two possibilities. First is during the phase transition, this zero momentum condenses first. This gives you a pneumatic phase, which only breaks your rotation symmetry. Or such kind of Rodon mode condenses first during the phase transition. So such kind of condensation at finite momentum will break both the rotation and translation symmetry. So what we get is something like a symmetric state. Okay, so now let's just have a small summary on the question we had already answered. First, we figure out that a quadrupolar interaction can drive a spontaneously pneumaticity inside a fractional quantum Hall region. And actually, such kind of phase transition is affected by the chiral nature of your fractional quantum Hall phase, because this will generate a Barry phase term, which changes your dynamical exponent and your scaling dimension of the pneumatic field at a quantum critical region. So your pneumatic phase transition would be very non-trivial compared to those conventional in liquid crystals. And also we find that the GMP mode is softened at a quantum criticality, but other topological quasi-particle excitations always remain gapped. Sorry.
So far you presented a theory involving a lambda level that is one-third filled, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the question is whether the same features hold for more complicated filling fractions and
for Laughlin states, it's yes, but there are some counterexample like nu equal two-thirds filling fractional quantum Hall state. This is a non-chiral state. And for such kind of non-chiral state, your Barry phase term's coefficient is zero, and then we don't have that.
Okay, so for those states, is there coexistence still between the pneumatic state and...
Yes, it's still a pneumatic state, but it's still a pneumatic fractional quantum Hall state, but their phase transition does not have this large dynamical exponent.
So is it true that what you have told us so far is still true even in the trivial integrator if you have a magnet, if you break time into a certain? So what I guess none of these features really depends on the nature, the fact that you have a topological order.
Yes, so actually in lots of other, apart from the fractional quantum Hall state, in some chain insulator states, if we drive a pneumatic phase transition, we also expect such kind of z equal to dynamic.
Even the trivial insulator.
In a true insulator, yes, there could be, because in fractional quantum Hall state, it is impossible because Hall viscosity is a robust quantity in fractional quantum Hall state, which has nothing to do with your interaction details or whatever. But in some chain insulator phase, actually the Hall viscosity is not universal. So even the chain number is zero there, we can have some non-zero Hall viscosity, and this will give you a Barry phase term. And that's not universal in those kind of.
Everything holds in those cases.
Actually, another problem is in some gapless span theory, like the Newcastle 1/2 Landau level or whatever Fermi surface coupled to a U1 gauge field with a chain Simons term, we will always have a such kind of Barry phase term. However, our dynamical exponent is not z equal 2. Instead, it's z equal 3. Because you always have a Landau damping term for your pneumatic field, and this is the leading order compared to a Barry phase. And our next step is answer a non-trivial question. How can the pneumatic phase inside your fractional quantum Hall region to be non-trivial? Is there any interesting interplay between your topological quasi-particles and your electromagnetic responses with your pneumatic degree of freedom? So first, still remember that our pneumatic coupled with the stress tensor, so we can always regard it as some dynamical metric at a composite fermion levels. So once we write on this dynamical metric, we will find your pneumatic degree of freedom enter into the spatial component of your geometry metric tensor. So once we calculate the Maxwell term and the electromagnetic response in the parity even channel, what we'll find is the pneumaticity would enter into a Maxwell term, so your Maxwell term becomes anisotropic. So this is the first result. And the second result, which turns out to be more non-trivial, is the coupling between the pneumatic field and your gauge degree of freedom has a coupling which is called a Wenzi type. So the Wenzi effect tells us if we put your fractional quantum Hall states on a non-flat geometry, then your electromagnetic response and your electron density should be modified because of the non-flat geometry curvature. And if we have a pneumatic phase, as long as the pneumatic boson forms a vortex, the vortex is something like a disclination. And at a disclination cone, you will find your geometry curvature is non-zero. So we expect the charge density should be redistributed at a vortex cone. And this is verified from your Wenzi type coupling, where the spin connection of the dynamical metric generated by a pneumatic degree of freedom coupled with your electromagnetic response. And a spin connection are actually composed of two parts. The first part, like this, is actually quadratic in a pneumatic field, and this is actually the pneumatic vortex degree of freedom. So this coupling tells us the pneumatic vortex minimal coupled with your electromagnetic gauge field, though they do carry a charge. And the second, inside your spin connection, there is also some term which is linear in your pneumatic field. And such kind of term is actually parity and time reversal even. So the physical interpretation of this term is, if we have a fluctuating pneumatic field, it's something like the electron quadrupole moment. In classical electron dynamics, we know if we have an electron quadrupole moment there, then your charge density would be redistributed, and this should affect your electromagnetic response, and that's why it coupled with your electromagnetic gauge field. And the consequence of this Wenzi effect is to say the vortex of your pneumatic field, which is the defect of your order parameter, has some non-trivial structure. First, the pneumatic vortex coupled with the electromagnetic gauge field, so they carry a charge, and their charge is not quantized because the total amplitude of your pneumatic field is not fixed. And in addition, if we have a pneumatic disclination, this would give rise to a non-zero geometry curvature of your dynamical metric, and consequently, it will change the local particle density. And because of that, we expect a pneumatic disclination can have some non-trivial braiding statistics with your topological quasi-particles. So they have non-trivial mutual statistics between a disclination and a topological quasi-particle. And also, if we go into higher order of your pure pneumatic response, we'll also find a gravitational chain Simons term, which is related with the central charge of your system. And this gravitational Chen Sim's term exactly tells your pneumatic, two pneumatic declination can have some non-trivial self-statistics. So your pneumatic defect, which is the vortex of your pneumaticity, is a self-anion there.
So is this pneumatic vortex building the 2-pi vortex for the pneumatic autocoupler?
Yes, yes.
So there's a quantized flux.
True.
And why is not charge quantized?
Because for the pneumatics, the vortex actually is something like that, where your mi, partial mu, and j. And if we write it in terms of the vortex degree of freedom, so we will find it depends on the total amplitude of your pneumatic field. And this one is not quantized. The pneumatic field can also have some small fluctuation, which is gapped. So your charge is not quantized.
But the vorticity is quantized, but as it couples with the electromagnetic field, the coefficient is
charge. Charge depends on the magnitude of
yes,
the
exactly.
On the magnitude of what?
Magnitude of the pneumatic field.
Yeah. So now I have shown that the pneumatic phase inside our fractional quantum Hall region is very non-trivial, and it's more than putting a pneumatic state and another layer of fractional quantum Hall state and stick them together, because the quasi-particles and your pneumatic defect have some interesting interplay. They carry fractional charge and statistics. So this is the answer. This is the question we have already answered. And our next step is, because on my previous slides, I have emphasized many times that the pneumatic can always be regarded as the dynamical metric because they modify your local geometry. But the problem here is your dynamical metric, which is induced by your pneumatic fluctuation, be truly equivalent to a true background metric when you put your fractional quantum Hall states really on a non-flat geometry? So first, the answer is no. And the problem is why they are not equivalent. So first, let's look at how do we couple with your metric degree of freedom, and how do we couple our pneumatic degree of freedom to your fermion. We know that the pneumatic only couple with the stress tensor of your fermion, because this is just from the Hubbard-Stanovich transformation of our quadrupolar interactions. So we don't need to look into this. Now, what we make sure is if we really put your fractional quantum Hall state on the arbitrary background metric, how does the metric degree of freedom couple with your fractional quantum Hall state? First, definitely they shall couple, the metric degree of freedom shall couple with your stress tensor. And this is how a Galilean invariant fermion system couple with your background geometries. However, one problem we'll encounter here is, remember we have done the Chen Sim's gauge theory for your fermion systems. The original fermion is spinless or spin polarized. However, the Chen Sim's, after we apply the Chen Sim's gauge theory, the composite fermion is something like a spinless particle bind with several flux. And such kind of composite particle carries a topological spin. And once a theory carries a topological spin, then they shall respond to your background metric in a more non-trivial way. So imagine we just have a particle and several several flux attached to it. And the flux is slightly tilted away from your original fermions, so they form the local frames. And once we put it on a non-flat geometry, like this sphere, and we want to do some parallel transport, you'll find your frame is always rotating. So once we go around a closed loop, because of the rotating of your frame, you will actually accumulate with some Barry phase, which should be proportional to the total geometry curvature enclosed. And we must reflect such kind of Barry phase inside our theory. So actually, one thing we have to make sure is the fermion we start with is always spinless, but a composite fermion carries a spin, which is the topological spin. And for spin for particles, apart from such kind of stress tensor, which distorts your effective mass, we shall also add a spin connection term in your covariant derivative. This spin connection term tells if we are doing some parallel transport in a non-flat geometry background, then we will accumulate with a Barry phase, which is proportional to the spin times the total geometry curvature enclosed inside. And the spin and carries actually depends on how many flux do you attach. Whenever we attach one flux, we'll find we'll carry one half topological spins. So now it is clear. The dynamical metric, which coming from your pneumatic degree of freedom, are really different from your background metric, because the dynamical metric only distorts your stress tensor. However, your background metric not only enter into your stress tensor, they will also respond to your topological spin of your quasi-particles. So once we write on the covariant derivative, we have to add on such kind of spin connections into our composite fermion theory. So that is why these two theories are actually different. And this is only unique in fractional quantum Hall states, because once we apply the composite particles, you'll find you are actually generating some topological spin for your composite fermions. So as a summary, in the first part of my talk, I'm studying the pneumatic phase and their phase transition inside a chiral topological phase of matter. And the phase transition could be very exotic because of the chiral nature, and we find their universality at a criticality is different from those pneumatic state in liquid crystal or ordinary Fermi surfaces. And we also show that the pneumatic phase and their defect play some important role inside your fractional quantum Hall phase, because they can carry fractional charge, they can have non-trivial braiding statistics with your topological quasi-particles. And actually, such kind of exotic behavior of pneumaticity in fractional quantum Hall states highly depend on the fact that there are some interesting geometry or gravitational responses inside your fractional quantum Hall state. So actually, in any kind of topological or symmetry-protected topological phase of matter, whenever there are some interesting geometry responses, we do expect their pneumatic phase transition and their pneumatic phase could be very interesting. So like for the pneumatic phase transition in a quantum anomalous Hall state, where there's some time reversal symmetry breaking and there's some chirality without external magnetic field, we can show that their phase transition also contains a Barry phase term because of the non-zero Hall viscosity. And therefore, we will always get a Lifshitz phase transition and such kind of chiral phase and their pneumatic phase transitions. And also, it's not unique in two spatial dimensions. In three spatial dimensions, if we start from some topological insulator or topological superconductors, the pneumatic vortex, which is the declination line in 3D, will couple with the Anxion string. So there are some non-trivial three-loop braiding statistics between two declination lines penetrated by an Anxion string. And such kind of effect is inherited from the gravitational theta term in the topological insulator or topological superconductor, which undermines your broken symmetry order parameter with some non-trivial topological band theory. So here what we have showed is the anisotropic state inside the topological states of matter could be more non-trivial and interesting than you imagine. So that's almost the end of the first part of my talk. And what I show is, I start from an isotropic topological state, and we break the symmetry, which is just breaking the spatial symmetry spontaneously by interaction, and we study their non-trivial phase transition and non-trivial anisotropic phases. In the second part of my talk, I will go from the opposite side. So in the second part of my talk, I will start from some kind of spatial symmetry breaking state, like a stripe state or a pneumatic state, and I want to restore these symmetries. The non-trivial thing is, when I restore these symmetries, I not only drive them into an anisotropic spatial state, I also concurrently drive such kind of phase of matter into a novel topological phase or symmetry-protected topological phase of matter. So how can that happen? So before I tell you how can that happen, let's review how do we restore a spatial symmetry from a stripe phase. So one of the most common stripe phase can be the stripe superconductor. If the two electrons form a Cooper pair at global momentum and condense, then the superconductivity field should be spatial dependent. And one of the possibilities is we form such kind of stripe superconductor where your superconductivity amplitude modulates along a certain direction and they have a stripe structure. The green line here is known as the nodal line where your superconductivity changes sign. So this is a stripe superconductor which breaks your translation symmetries. And in order to restore your spatial symmetry, what we can do is first, we can develop something called dislocations. So such kind of dislocation will disorders your stripe configuration, and the proliferation of these dislocations finally restores your continued translation symmetry and drive the theory into some kind of pneumatic superconductor state. So this only breaks the rotation symmetry. And in order to restore the rotation symmetry as well, we can develop something called the disclinations. The disclination actually bends your nodal line into arbitrary directions. So finally, what we have is arbitrary configurations of your nodal line, and we have a saturation of such kind of nodal line. This is an isostropic superconductor, which does not break any spatial symmetries. And now what we want to do is we want to start from such kind of striped superconductor state, and by means of restores your rotation translation symmetry, we want to concurrently drive your phase of matter into a SPT or topological phase. And how can this happen? So if it happens, there are two key features we want to take into account. First, how does the topological degree of freedom intertwine with your spatial symmetries? And how does such kind of restorement of your spatial symmetry give rise to SPT natures? So in order to drive such kind of non-trivial phase transition between a spatial symmetry breaking phase to a spatial invariant topological state, let's look at a specific system we are going to work on. So this is something like the single layer graphene, which contains four Dirac cones. And we assume there are some intracone superconductivity which gaps out these Dirac cones, and the superconductivity has a pair density wave structures. So your superconductivity field modulates along this y directions. So this has a striped structure where this blue region has a negative sign and this white region has a positive sign. This blue, this red line is known as the nodal line, where your superconductivity field changes sign, and at the nodal line, your superconductivity is zero, so there should carry some gapless fermion mode inside your nodal line. And actually, because of the non-trivial spin optical couple structure here, inside your nodal line, we will find there are actually four copies of the helical Marana mode. So we have four left moving and four right moving Marana mode inside each nodal line. And now what we want to do is, I want to take advantage of this gapless fermion mode, turn on some interaction to gap them out, and after I gap them out, the corresponding low energy theory is equivalent to some 1D spin chain. So one way to see that is, first, because we have helical Marana mode, so we can always generate some fermion bilinear mass between a left moving and a right moving one, and this will gap them out, and such kind of gapped chain can be equivalent to some Kitaev chain, which contains a Marana mode on the boundary. And because we have four copies of them, so we have four Marana mode on the boundary. And for four Marana mode, if you don't want to break any time reversal symmetry, then the only way to lift degeneracy is to leave them into a Cramer's doublet, which still has the twofold degeneracy. And if your boundary contains a Cramer's doublet, then your Bok theory should be equivalent to an AKLT chain, or say the Haldane chain. So actually, we can turn on some interaction for these four copies of the helical Marana mode there. And finally, the effective theory after we gap them out becomes boson SPT chain, which is the Haldane chain. And Haldane chain's low energy effective theory can be described by this topological nonlinear sigma model with a 2 pi theta term here. And we know one character of the Haldane chain is they form some translation invariant VBS in your bulk, but we have a spin 1/2 on the boundary. This is exactly verified by your topological theta term, because if we have a boundary for this topological nonlinear sigma model, your boundary will encounter with a zero-dimensional O3 Weissmuller-Witten term, which is exactly the spin 1/2 degree of freedom. So now what we do is we have get rid of the gapless Marana fermion inside your nodal line. And finally, what we obtain is a low energy theory equivalent to a Haldane chain. So here, actually, we have to decorate your nodal line with a Haldane chain in a more natural way. And now what we need to do is we want to melt such kind of stripe by some dislocations or disclinations proliferations. And after we proliferate them, your nodal line degree of freedom becomes disordered. So we can imagine the ground state wave function after your stride melting becomes the condensation of your nodal lines. So your ground state wave function involved with all closed nodal loop configurations in the bulk, while each nodal loop is actually a domain wall between a positive and a negative value of your superconductivity field. And your nodal line actually contains some AKLT oscillator Hall and chain degree of freedom. So such kind of theory, what we claim is it should be an SPT phase. So how do we know this is an SPT phase? We have to write down some effective theory to verify that. But how do we reflect the fact of such kind of decorated nodal line condensate? First, in order to write down effective field theory, let's count the degree of freedom we have. We have an O3 degree of freedom, which lives on this nodal line, because for the Hodden chain, it is described by the O3 nonlinear sigma model. We also have a Z2 degree of freedom, which is the positive and negative sign between your nodal line. So total degree of freedom is Z2 cross O3. And I can probably enlarge them to O4 or just the O4 with some kind of anisotropy. And because everything is in a disorder phase, so I can first write down a nonlinear sigma model with a fluctuating term of your O4 rotor in a strong coupling case. In a strong coupling case, everything is disordered. However, to fully reflect the fact that your nodal line is decorated with something like the Hodden chain, we have to write down this one, which is the O4 theta term in 2 plus 1D, and this actually counts how many O4 instanton do we have in 2 plus 1D space-time. The physical meaning of this term is, imagine we have a nodal line, so this one is the nodal line density. Along the nodal line, there contains a 1 plus 1D theta term, a theta equal 2 pi, which exactly reflects the fact of a Hodden chain. So this term actually couples your nodal line density with a lower dimensional theta term, and this term exactly reflects the fact that your nodal line is already decorated some non-trivial degree of freedom. So the essence for us to drive a phase transition between a symmetry breaking state to a symmetry restored state with SPT is we want to proliferate such kind of nodal lines, and a nodal line should contain some non-trivial degree of freedom, and to reflect such kind of non-triviality inside your effective field theory, that is to say your nodal line density contains some lower dimensional theta term, which is a topological term, and such kind of nodal line condense actually give you a high dimensional topological term, which verify this is an SPT perturbed by this time reversal and Z2 symmetry. Your time reversal acts on the Hodden chain degree of freedom to make sure the Hodden chain cannot be polarized. Z2 degree of freedom act on everything to make sure everything is disordered, so your nodal line must be in a condensed phase. So the essence for us to drive a phase transition between a symmetry breaking state to a symmetry restored topological state is we want to decorate the defect and condense them. And this can be done in arbitrary directions. And another example we did in three spatial dimensions is we start from a 3D paradensity wave state, which breaks your translation symmetries. And by such kind of slab melting instead of dry melting, we will restore your rotation symmetry and meanwhile drive the theory into a 3D topological order state with non-trivial particle loop rating statistics. So how do we do that? The essence is still to decorate your nodal degree of freedom with some non-trivial structure, then such kind of nodal membrane condense can probably give you some non-trivial state. So the system we specifically look into is the well semi-metal, or it could be the Dirac semi-metals, and we contains 8 pairs of well cones with opposite chirality and turn on some intra-cone superconductivity to gap them out first. And we also assume such kind of superconductivity as a paradensity wave structure, so it modulates along this y directions. Such kind of superconductor has a slab configuration. In this slab, we have a negative sign. In this slab, we have a positive sign. And the blue plane between the positive and negative slab is called a nodal plane, where your pairing field is zero. And once your pairing field is zero, the electrons does not have a fermion bilinear mass term, so we contain some gapless fermion degree of freedom inside this nodal plane. And by some kind of interactions, we can gap out the gapless Marani cones inside this nodal plane, couple them to an O3 rotor, and make them equivalent to a boson SPT inside your nodal plane. The boson SPT generated by interacting fermion inside this nodal plane is actually equivalent to a topological paramagnetic state. So how do we understand such kind of topological paramagnetic state? This topological paramagnetic state can be written in terms of the O3 rotor. So the ground state wave function is just a condensation of the skirmion inside the 2D plane. And we have a special sign structure in the front, which actually counts how many skirmion parities do you have in each configurations. So if we have all number of skirmion here, then we will encounter with a pi phase here. So that is to say, for any odd parity configurations, we'll encounter with a minus sign in the front. And the ground state wave function is the coherent sum of all smooth configurations involved here. So this is a topological paramagnetic state we decorate inside our nodal plane. And further, what we can do is we can mount these slab configurations by some similar dislocation, disclination, condensation
in
3D. In 3D.
So each nodal, it's a nodal plane that you're melting now?
Yes. So the ground state wave function is something like a nodal membrane condense. Your wave function involved with lots of membranes, or it's something like bubbles, which is the where inside or outside your bubble, your pairing changes sign. And on the surface of such kind of bubble, which is the nodal membrane, it is decorated with the topological paramagnetic state. So the wave function first has a membrane condensation structure. And actually, what I will argue is such kind of wave function also has the loop condensation structures. So remember, the degree of freedom we have is an O3 rotor inside each membrane. And for an O3 rotor, they can form a skirmion configuration. In three spatial dimensions, the skirmion is something like a flux line, where we can map it into some electromagnetic flux line of a U1 gauge field. And the ground state wave function involved with all closed loop configurations of the skirmion flux. Well, along the skirmion flux line, there are lots of fluctuating domain walls where your pairing changes sign. So this is a ground state wave function with both membrane and the loop condensate. And in order to verify whether it's a topological state, the easiest way for us to do is find out their topological quasi-particles and test their braiding statistics. So what are the probable deconfined topological quasi-particle? Remember that a ground state wave function involved with a closed membrane and closed loop configuration. Then a probable deconfined excitation can be associated with an open membrane condition or open string condition. So if we have an open membrane, so the membrane has a boundary, which is a loop, and such kind of loop excitation is bound with a half superconductivity vortex and a half dislocation. So open membrane actually generates a loop excitation. And also, if we have an open string, because the skirmion loop can be mapped into an electromagnetic gauge flux, and if a gauge flux has an open string condition, the endpoint is associated with the monopoles. And such kind of monopole is actually related with the O3 monopole configurations in your real space. And so this is a monopole excitation which gives you the hedgehog configuration of your O3 rotor. And this is a particle-like excitation. So we have a particle and loop excitations, and we can test their braiding statistics. So one straightforward to test their braiding statistics is first we draw open membrane condition whose boundary contains flux, and we take a monopole and antimonopole which should be connected by a skirmion flux. I drive this monopole going through your membrane, going out, and annihilate with your antimonopole. This procedure is equivalent to a braiding statistics. And after this braiding, what we find is we are left over with a global skirmion flux, which is the orange line here, which connects your monopole and antimonopole. So doing a braiding is equivalent to adding an additional skirmion flux inside your nodal membrane. And remember, our nodal membrane is decorated with a topological paramagnetic state whose ground state wave function can be written in terms of the parity between different skirmion configurations. Now I add an additional skirmion inside, so even an odd parity will switch their signs. And this will give you a global minus sign of your excited wave functions. And this means after this braiding procedure, what we obtain is a pi Berry phase, so that's why you have a minus sign in the front. So this is a pictorial way to see our braiding statistic. to fully verify that we really have a Z2 topological order here, we can write down the effective theory after the membrane condensed. So first, we still count the degree of freedom we have. We have all three Roeder degree of freedom decorated on the membrane. And we have a U1 degree of freedom, which is associated with the real and imaginary part of your superconductivity. So now everything is disordered. Then such kind of theory can be written in terms of the O5 nonlinear sigma model with an O5 topological theta term, 3 plus 1D with a 2 pi theta term. For such kind of theory, we have two excitations. One is the monopole can have the O3 Rutherford can form the monopole, which is the particle excitation, and a superconductivity vortex can form the U1 gauge, can form the gauge flux. And actually, the superconductivity flux and monopole only have 2 pi statistics, which can be seen from such kind of topological theta term. However, if we gauge the Z2 symmetry, then we can have a deconfined half superconductivity vortex bound with the pi gauge flux. And such kind of half superconductivity vortex will have pi braiding statistics with your monopoles. And remember, the system we are starting with is the paradensity wave state. For any paradensity wave state, there is a deconfined fractional vortex excitation, which is associated with the half superconductivity vortex bound with a half dislocations. And this gives rise to the non-trivial loop and the particle braiding statistics here. So actually, our theory is associated with a 3D SPT phase after we gauge the Z2 symmetry. And the paradensity wave we start with actually provides a nature way for us to gauge the Z2 symmetry, because without such kind of paradensity wave, it is impossible for you to get a half superconductivity vortex loop as a deconfined excitation.
Whatever the word is, mimeticity to give yourself the loop excitations. Like that's the, you have to melt these planes into a mnematic in order to get all these excitations.
So usually what we first melt them is to proliferate dislocations, and then you get a mnematic state, and then we have to proliferate some kind of disclinations to get a fully symmetric state. So usually mnematic state is the intermediate state, although if the disclination condensed first, then we could have a direct phase transition between a stripe and an anisotropic state. But at finite temperature, usually we have to go through the pneumatic state. So as a summary, what we do is we start from a spatial symmetry breaking phase and drive a phase transition toward a topological order, symmetry protected topological order phase. And the essence is, if we want to restore your symmetry, usually we have to condense some kind of defect of your order parameter. And if we can decorate your defect with some non-trivial degree of freedom, then your defect density would be coupled to a lower dimensional topological term. And such kind of decorated defect condensate can probably give rise to a high dimensional topological terms in a more nature way. And actually, this can be regarded as a physical realization of the decorated defect condensate. And the decoration of the nodal line provides with some protected entanglement and protected the edge mode, which makes your anisotropic phase non-trivial. So that's the essence of our work. Right, thank you.
I have a question. For the first part of your talk, I'm trying to think about what the question was. So you showed us evidence that there might be a pneumatic phase without the pneumatic susceptibility. Okay, but now you have a theory, a sort of theory of this. I don't want to call it coexistence, but this coexistence region is super solid between mnematicity and fractional quantum health. So do you have a proposal for an experimental signature in some transport property that'll directly show this, your proposal?
We have some proposal. First, let's look into the gap phase, which are the Laughlin state. Mm-hmm.
And the direct measurement could be something like the conductivity or the resistivity at finite temperature, because we are in a gap system at zero temperature or zero frequency, everything is zero. But at finite momentum, then we can expect there could be some anisotropy in our transport. Another thing we can do is, like, we slightly...
But you already have some... Oh, no, you already have some anisotropy in the transport, don't you?
You mean the experimental data?
Yeah.
Yes, but what they... In their case, they just apply in-plane magnetic fields, so their rotation symmetry is broken by hand instead of spontaneous. And another thing is, if we slightly raise the temperature or if we have some mechanism to melt such kind of pneumatic phase by some proliferations of the pneumatic vortices, the pneumatic vortex will actually trap some charge degree of freedom. And actually, this is somehow verified by some Code Atom experiment. So what they do is they are working on some boson quantum Hall state because they're doing Code Atom systems. And they are putting your bosons in a rotating trap, so your Coriolis force do the job as the Lorentz force of charged particles. And this is how they simulate a fractional quantum Hall state. And they put it on a conic geometry, and what they will find is we have a conic geometry on the tip of the cone, your geometry curvature non-zero, and they can measure the density distribution, and they find there is a sharp peak at the tip of the cone.
That experiment's been done?
Yeah, in UChicago. And actually, in some compressible fractional quantum Hall state, like the nuclear one-half fractional quantum Hall state, one thing we can probably measure, and actually it is already measured, is there will be some mixing between your pneumatic fluctuation or your pneumatic Goldstone mode and your conductivity. So if you measure your longitudinal conductivity in all directions, in a certain kind of direction, you will find a sharp resonance peak at zero frequency and zero momentum. And this is actually a mixing between your conductivity and your Goldstone boson. That's why you have a resonance peak there. This is observing some experiment, but what they observe is as some finite momentum because they don't have continuous rotation symmetry and they only have some C4 symmetry. So there is a small gap instead of a Goldstone mode, and that's why they find it at finite momentum.
So in the second part, so it's the main point is that this kind of picture where you start from symmetric broken state and proliferate some defects is a way to physically realize various approachable states.
Yes.
That the main message.
Yes.
And is there some new topological state that you could discover in this way, or is it?
Actually, theoretically speaking, we can always manipulate whatever topological state you want. But if we want a physical way to realize them, like we start from some stripe superconductor state and take the advantage of those gapless fermion to decorate your nodal line, then we can only generate such kind of topological order state and some exotic states. We don't find a physical realization in a microscopic way.
At the very critical point in fractional quantum Hall state, is sigma xy quantized or?
In the experiment or in
the theoretical?
Yes, because sigma xy is always quantized and we are always in that plateau region.
Even those gaps.
Yeah, at least for sigma xy at zero frequency, it's universal.
So what is the argument for that?
Because once you are in a fractional quantum Hall region, the whole conductivity is always a topological quantity, which it's independent of your geometry curvature.
You have a gapless pneumatic order parameter flow.
Yeah, the gapless Goldstone boson of your pneumaticity only interfere with your GMP mode, not your Laughlin quasi particle.
Mm-hmm. So no Goldstone mode. So it's just a critical pneumatic fluctuation. And you're saying that doesn't interfere with sigma xy?
No.
Okay, but the adiabatic argument doesn't apply because of the gapless.
Well, we have a gapless mode, but that's a collective mode instead of your single particle mode of your composite particle.
So is there a rigorous argument, or is it?
Well, the argument is if we If we have an adiabatically connection without any gap closing, then we can argue that the topological quantity between A region and B region must remain unchanged. But the opposite is not true. If there's some gap closing, probably with, really with some collective mode, it does not always encounter with a change of your topological quantity like the Hall conductivity. The opposite is not true.
So that argument implies sigma xy may be quantized, but that's not enough to say it's quantized.
True. But for
this model, actually what the pneumatic does is it just generates some anisotropic mass, but your Hall conductivity is never affected by such kind of anisotropic mass.
Do you mean actually the pneumatic all the time is neutral on the one?
Yes, pneumatic is neutral. The vortex is not neutral, but the pneumatic field itself is neutral.
So, could you please go to the slide showing this graphene model with striping, with superconducting stripes? Maybe you explained it, but I guess I missed it. So how did you gap out these gapless boundary modes?
Boundary?
Yeah, so in the second slide, the next slide, you showed that somehow we can gap out these Marana edge modes. Because, so previously you said that at the domain wall, there are gapless modes, right?
At the boundary of...
Right.
Yeah.
Not fully gap out, just turn it into a twofold degeneracy as a Cramer's doublet.
Ah, I see.
That's the Fitkovsky type Kitaev-Fitkovsky type interaction.
So another question is, so here you build the or motivated this. So in a so later on you motivated a nonlinear sigma model with O4 order parameter. So there you motivated by considering proliferating AKLD loops.
Mm-hmm, yes.
So I wonder whether you would end up with the same theory if you start directly with fermions and integrate out these fermions.
Yes, exactly.
So I can skip this domain wall picture and direct sit down and integrate out fermions, and I would end up with the same theory.
In principle, you can, but the reason why I say you can be is if you write along this
fermion theory and couple this rotor with some kind of fermion bilinear integral and your gapped fermion, you'll get exactly that O4 theta term. But it's not natural to see why such kind of decorated AKL T-chain degree of freedom can appear inside your nodal line. And another reason why I focus on this is we want to see what is the phase transition theory between them. Symmetry breaking state to a SPT state. So the universal way to do it is decorate your symmetry defect.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, if there are no further questions, then let's thank you, see you again.